It's a big world out there with billions of people speaking thousands of languages. If they're going to understand each other, they'll need help. They'll need translators for their documents and interpreters for their meetings. In fact, the U.S. Labor Department predicts a 42% increase this decade in employment for translators and interpreters. Today on Focus, we'll be talking about this growing field with University of Illinois Professor Elizabeth Lowe. She directs the Center for Translation Studies at the Urbana campus, where they're adding a master's degree program in the fall. And we'll talk to Tarina Bell, owner of Louisville-based In Every Language. They promise efficient, accurate translation services for business clients with an emphasis on understanding cultural nuances. What does it take to be a translator? I'm Jim Meadows. We'll find out today on Focus. That's coming up after this hour's news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. If you know another language, it can be a big help for you professionally, but if you don't, you can hire someone who does. Those people are translators and interpreters. And as our global contacts increase, translators and interpreters are increasingly in demand. Today, our guests are involved in training translators and interpreters and marketing their services. Joining me in the studio is Professor Elizabeth Lowe. She's the director of the Center for Translation Studies at the University of Illinois. Welcome to Focus, Professor Lowe.
Thank you, Jim. It's good to be here.
And with us on the phone is Tarina Bell. She owns In Every Language, with offices in Louisville and New York. In Every Language provides translation services to the private sector, both business and nonprofit. Tarina, welcome to Focus.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for having me.
And Tarina, how's business? Is this indeed a growing field?
Yes, sir. Business is very much so booming.
Okay. And Elizabeth, your center, it's been around just, I guess, about, what, 7 years?
Actually, since 2008, the center was established, and we began teaching courses in 2009.
Okay. And the master's program that you're adding, does that reflect a growing need for more translators and interpreters, or a growing need for better ones, or are both?
I would say both, Jim. We need more good, qualified translators and interpreters who are trained in a number of areas, which we can talk about in a little bit. There are some translators and interpreters who are practicing without formal training, and employers are now more and more demanding academic credentials.
Well, we welcome you to this conversation as well. You can call in your questions and comments at 333-9455, and you can call 1-800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL. And 1-800-222-WILL to reach us toll-free. And our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. I'm wondering, what is the difference between being bilingual, Elizabeth, and being able to translate and interpret?
Well, translation and interpreting is a highly specialized profession requiring a number of skills that go beyond language proficiency. And so being bilingual does not necessarily mean that you have that training or those special skills. And what we try to do in our program is to address some of the specific competencies that are needed, one of them being broad cultural background and context, so that when a translator or interpreter is working, they can understand the nuances of the text or the speech that they are supposed to render. And another issue we have today is the issue of bilingualism, which is usually meant to signify that a person is highly proficient, native proficiency in their native language, and then highly proficient in a second and or third or maybe fourth language. Today we have a growing issue with those who are language B, speakers who don't really have an A language, and that is possibly because they have been dislocated at a young age, have never absorbed the language of the host country perfectly, and also have lost their proficiency in their own native language.
Tarina, I'm wondering how this works out with your company as you're looking for people to hire to do translation.
Well, what Elizabeth is talking about on the language B and the language A, in layman's terms, it pretty much comes down to what you speak natively. And the number one rule of professional translation is that people must work into their native language. I clearly am very much American Southern English is my native language, born and raised in West Kentucky. But I also am a French speaker. I would never work into French.
You would not translate from English to French?
Correct. Yes, sir. I would only translate from French into English because it is the native language. And I think that part of what Elizabeth is talking about is when people speak multiple languages. Like, I know one family from the Congo that there are six people in the family. You have six different native languages because of the way that war displaced them. And so the way that that comes into business is whenever we're having to work with certain languages, it's very important that we understand and that we not just necessarily take people's word for it when they say, well, I'm a native Swahili speaker or I'm a native French speaker, because in this instance, their youngest child, she was a native French speaker until they moved to the U.S. at age four, and now she doesn't speak a word of it. And so it's very important in business to make sure that the people that you are working with truly are fluent or more fluent in the language that they're going into than the language that they're coming from.
And that makes me wonder, I understand it's not something your company does currently, but interpretation. Do interpreters work just in one direction, or are they expected to work in both directions? And then
now,
what?
We do offer interpreting. We offer interpreting over the telephone and then on-site for special clients. But interpreting very much so is in both directions in the vast majority of settings. You have conference interpreting, which is what you think of. Like if you watch Nicole Kidman in The Interpreter, and she's sitting there with a headset on her hand, on her head, and you know, she's got her microphone and everything, that's only going to be into one language, like for a conference or a meeting setting. But the vast, vast majority of interpreters working in the U.S. today are working both ways. And those are people that are working in the courts, they're working in medical settings, because you can't just do that in one direction. So if the doctor says in English, how are you today, and I interpret that into French, the person's going to answer in French. So then you've got to go from French into English.
Okay. Elizabeth, your center is setting up a new master's degree program. Are you signing up students now?
Yes, we are. We're accepting admissions right now. In fact, we have admitted a few already.
So how's the flow of the show of interest?
We've had a lot of show of interest, many inquiries, and from all over the world, by the way. And that is because we are offering both an online master's degree that can be taken entirely off campus and a campus-based MA. So some of the international interest is coming from people who live in other parts of the world. As we've been able to send out information about the program, we've been getting a constant stream of inquiries. Of course, the application process is somewhat involved, and so people have to take the time to actually submit all the materials we're requesting.
What does a master's degree program in translation include? What will people be learning how to do?
They'll be learning some core competencies. One of them, for example, being the whole field of terminology acquisition and research. And that means acquiring the special language that a translator needs for work in special subject areas. Let's say if Caterpillar needed a manual translated, they would have to learn all the terminology that's associated with Caterpillar equipment and instruction manuals. There are techniques for acquiring this terminology quickly that usually involve advanced internet research and database use. And so this is a whole area that has to be learned. There's a great number of concepts that have to be mastered. Another thing that students need to learn are the ethics of the profession, just like the field of medicine. Translators have and interpreters have ethical codes that they have to adhere to, and they have to learn how to behave in a professional manner in a whole variety of different settings. There are, in addition to research methods and ethics, translators need to be well-grounded in the history and the theory of the field. And even though practicing translators are not always thinking in terms of theory, it is very helpful for them to have the background in what has been already developed in terms of a knowledge base in the field.
Tarina, you're at your website, ineverylanguage.com, I see some discussion of the idea of localization, and that I'm not quite sure what it is. It sounds a little bit about knowing cultural context. Can you talk about that?
It is a lot of what you just said, yes, sir. You can make the argument that really good translation is localization. But to take an everyday concept, I'm sure that most of our listeners today have heard of the Super Bowl, you know, little thing with football. I think it's in February. It may be in March right now, somewhere my father and brother are screeching. But if you were to walk into a sales meeting or a board meeting and say, well, this deal is so important. You know, this deal, it's like our Super Bowl game. We've really got to practice up for it. We've got to go in there and we've got to win this. And then all of a sudden you're starting to talk to people in Spain or maybe people in Brazil or people in, I don't know, Romania. They don't know what the Super Bowl is. The Super Bowl is a very, very American concept. And if you were to say this is our Super Bowl, maybe one of them might know what it is. And they'd say, oh, a game and a sport we don't care about. Okay, and then completely dismiss it. So your meaning is completely and utterly lost. And so localization would go in there and actually change that to this is our World Cup. Because soccer is something that they care about, and that is something that's going to get the same meaning behind as like an American Super Bowl. And so it's not just with things like that, but also with colors, with images. Say you have a picture on your website, and it is a woman who is presenting to a boardroom full of men. In America, yay, great, that's going to go over just fine. Saudi Arabia, not so much. So it's going in there, and it's seeing how to be more culturally precise with the language, and then what also beyond language conveys meaning.
Well, we are listening to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and we're talking about translation and interpreting. It's a growing field, and our guests are Tarina Bell, owner of In Every Language, which provides translation services for business clients, and Professor Elizabeth Lowe of the Center for Translation Studies at the University of Illinois. Call your questions and comments at 333-9455 or toll-free 1-800-222-9455, or you can email your question to will-talk@illinois.edu, and you can send your question by way of Twitter or Facebook at Focus580. Tarina, I was wondering, there was a few months ago when I was working on a story where I was dealing with a local company which had whose parent company was in Brazil, and I found myself first trying to telephone them and then sending them an email and working with some translating help. And actually what I did at that case was go to the Portuguese studies program here at the university, and they were very helpful, but we ran into a wall with some, what I gathered to be some technical language, not super technical language, but technical language involving some manufacturing process. Is this the sort of thing that a company like yours would have been better off turning to?
Yes, sir. I don't know about better off. It sounds like you ran into some things there that were very specific, but it is important with translators to realize, and this is a fallacy that a lot of companies run into, especially when they think, well, my secretary took Spanish in high school, or you know, our sales guy is from Mexico, so of course he should translate our sales materials. What you run into is that just because you're fluent in the language doesn't mean that you know all of the vocabulary or terminology that's used in that language. You know, like if I were to start talking about circus clouds or cumulus clouds, a meteorologist would know what I was talking about, but I don't know if all of our listeners would immediately know the difference, even though everybody that's listening to the program right now is fluent in English or proficient enough in English, at least, to be listening and learning from it. And so just as there are certain things that you know more about, like if there were translation about radio, you know, you're going to know a lot of the terminology that goes into that more than someone else. Just as you as a native English speaker know that for English, translators have groups of vocabulary that they understand like that for both languages. And so it's important when you're working with someone, speaking the language is it's very much just the first step. You've got to know what is going on inside of that language for the subject matter of the translation. And that's where a company can help, because we have people that they specialize in technical Portuguese, but then also maybe they know legal Portuguese or just the different subject areas to where you've got one place where you can go.
Well, at this point, Tarina, how many, let's say, languages and countries have you branched out to as far as knowing the localization, and how many technical fields do you have people who know a little bit of the lingo of?
Oh, gosh, that is such a vast question. We have been in business for almost 8 years now, and we offer over 180 languages. At a certain point, you just kind of lose count, to be honest with you.
And are all your people full-time? Do you use part-timers or contract people on contract? How do you...
The way that the translation industry works, 95% of U.S. companies have employees who do things like sales and project management. Our office manager is absolutely wonderful. You know, she came and fixed the printer yesterday. You wouldn't think that that's something that a translation company would need, but we need office staff just like any other profession. The translators and interpreters who are doing the language work, 95% of companies in the U.S. will contract those individuals. Because this day, like, I may need technical Romanian today, but I'm probably not going to need technical Romanian next week. Next week, I'm going to need legal Spanish because of just what different client needs are. This client may need something this week, but next week going to be a different client. And so what these individuals do is that they are, for the vast majority of them, full-time individuals where they have multiple translation companies throughout the U.S. and throughout the world, really, that they will work with.
And Elizabeth, maybe I could ask you about that. When, with the people that you're training, the fields that you see, the jobs you see them going in, what you tell them as far as what to expect, what sort of possibilities are there out there for translators and interpreters? Are there salary jobs out there? Are we talking about making a living from freelancing?
There's a great variety of jobs available right now. In fact, you quoted some of the statistics. The list of types of jobs for translators and interpreters is growing rapidly. So, for example, you can kind of imagine it by sector. The U.S. government is hiring in a number of different capacities. Different federal agencies need both text translators and interpreters. They also need people who can do what they call open source analysis. So these are people who will read newspapers and Twitter feeds and Facebook posts from around the world and provide analysis to policymakers who can then make decisions on how to respond to events around the world. There is a large demand in the medical field for qualified translators and interpreters because of the limited English proficiency law that requires all patients to have available to them translation and interpretation services if they do not speak English, so they can communicate with medical providers. In the law, in the legal field, there's a tremendous demand for qualified translators and interpreters in court settings and in the lawyer's office. In other words, to be able, for the same reason, to handle negotiations and conversations between the legal system and the individual who is in a legal situation. And I could go on for a long time, but localization is one field I wanted to tell you about. Tarina started to talk about that, and we will be training our students in localization that requires also knowledge of working with specialized software that is available to translators in order to localize products like software more effectively.
By using software, you're talking about translating software or using software for translation?
Both. There is software available to make the translators work more efficient and consistent. And there's also translation software available to help localize things like software and websites. And there are a lot of companies, for example, Apple and Microsoft, who are busy producing their products into formats that are adapted to different user audiences. And so the software is a helpful tool in completing that process.
Is this different from the sort of software people see for free on the internet, services like Babelfish?
Yeah, that is called automatic or machine translation, and that's very different. And there is a lot of discussion around those tools right now. Machine translation is definitely the elephant in the room, and it's going to be with us. It's a question of how it can be made to be more accurate, because right now the output is highly inaccurate. And one job that is available for our graduates is to do what they call MT post-editing, machine translation post-editing, because the output is often very garbled and requires the hand of a human editor.
Tarina, do your people use software in any way as a support just to speed things up?
We very much so do. In fact, I would say that any company that their translators are not using software in some shape, form, or fashion, that that they're not working with professional translators. That's one of the quickest ways that I can tell if someone is an ad hoc bilingual or if they're really a pro, because if you're not using technology, you might as well still be working with a typewriter in 1983. The fact of the matter is that the White House STEM Committee actually involves the Globalization and Localization Association, which is the International Trade Association for what we do. So when the White House is talking about the science and technology jobs, they are talking about translation. So yes, sir, we very much so do stay up on the latest technology.
And I take it that software certainly hasn't reached the point where it can work on its own unchecked, at least not the stuff I've seen.
Right. It depends on what you're working with. Like if you're sending an email to somebody that you met online, by all means, please use Google. You know, but if this is something where somebody's going to chop their hand off because they didn't put your machine together appropriately, probably not to that point yet.
Okay. We're going to take a short break in a moment. If you've ever worked as a translator, or used a translator, I'd be interested in hearing your experiences. By all means, give us a call at 333-9455 or toll free 1-800-222-9455. This is Focus on WYLL. I'm Jim Meadows. We're back on Focus with Professor Elizabeth Lowe of the Center for Translation Studies at the University of Illinois and Tarina Bell, owner of the translation services firm In Every Language, and with back with you interested in your thoughts about translation and interpreting, if you've done it or if you've used the services or tried to do it, give us a call and let us know about your experiences. Our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Our phone number, 333-9455. The toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. And Tarina, I understand that one of your notable clients was the sculptor for the Martin Luther King Memorial in Washington. Is that the case?
Yes, sir. When you were asking about localization, I actually also thought about them, but I didn't want to prattle on too long.
Now, that's, I'm looking at the name, Lei Yijin, it was the sculptor?
Oh, Lord, don't ask me. I don't speak Chinese.
But this was the person who actually created the yes. Martin Luther King Jr. statue that you can see now in Washington, D.C. What was the language issue there?
Well, the master sculptor on the project is a native Mandarin Chinese speaker. And so at first we worked on the legal documents, like the actual contract, because even when, like say the attorney maybe speaks a little Chinese or the sculptor speaks a little English, it's always a good idea with legal documents to have things in both languages. That way if there's any misunderstanding later, somebody doesn't completely dismiss your case over a translation error. And so what we did was we helped the Memorial Foundation to have a bilingual version of all of their contracts and legally binding documents with the master sculptor. And then what happened, once the artistic process started, there was a bit of an issue to where the designs that kept coming back very much, well, I'll just be honest, they kind of made Dr. King look a little fat. And they couldn't get the master sculptor to understand. And at one point, they were like, look, you know, please stop making him look like a sumo wrestler. And then something went off in our head, and we were like, oh, wait, you know, this is where we really need to go in and localize. Because if you look at the master sculptor's native culture, they respect sumo wrestlers. That's something that they do. And sumo wrestlers are very fat. You know, they just are. And over in the U.S., we tend to disrespect people who are overweight, and we tend to respect people who are taller and longer and leaner and thinner and all of those wonderful athletic things. And so basically we had to go in and be like, wait, you know, he's trying to make him a sumo wrestler because you're saying, please make him into a more respectable figure, and he doesn't understand what's going on here because he is to him. So basically just having to go in and what are the images that connotate respect in a person in the U.S., what are the images that connotate respect in a person in China, and how do we align those two things? So I like to joke around that we're why the doctor has a neck.
Okay. So you were able to work that out to everybody's satisfaction then?
Yes, okay. Very quickly, actually. It took like 10 minutes once we figured out what was going on.
We have an email in from Ryan, looks like texting from the tractor in this case, and he's asking about, language instruction, and I take it people going into the center to learn translation and interpreting already are expected to know more than one language.
That's correct. The students we work with have a high degree of proficiency in a second, possibly third language, and are native proficient in their native language.
Ryan wants to know, what's your opinion of the way Rosetta Stone teaches language? Is that is that a viable path to, you know, really mastering a language?
Well, I think it's a good start, and it very much depends on the student's perseverance, because learning a language, like anything else, requires a great deal of practice and perseverance. And also, quite frankly, one has to memorize a lot of things. So the best formula for learning language is actually a combination of strategies. A program like Rosetta Stone can be a good complement to a language learning effort, but we always recommend as well face-to-face classroom time, because the modeling that one receives from the instructor is very important, and also cultural immersion, being in a country for some period of time where the language that you'd like to learn is spoken.
That's for learning the language. Is that also needed when you're learning the craft of translation?
Well, we assume that that our students come to us already knowing the language. What we do find is that the translation program helps them perfect their language skills, and often they are motivated to take more advanced language courses or to spend some time in country to improve their skills. And what translation points out is that language learning is a lifelong pursuit.
Tarina, I was wondering, what do you look for in your staff and employees? What skills and experience do you find that you need?
First and foremost, we look for professionals. We look for people who they want to do this. This is their job. This is their career. This is their passion. We don't look for people who have an extra hour and a half on Saturday. Maybe they're from a Spanish-speaking country, they moved here, and this might be a great way for them to make some extra money. We work with career-level professionals. It goes back to what I was saying earlier about the technology. You either mean it or you don't. This is either what you want to do for a living or it's not. And now, granted, there are always new people trying to enter the profession, and, you know, we encourage that. You know, but get your groundings, get certification. The American Translators Association offers certification. Get it through them. Show me that you are serious. There are so many people out there that just assume that just because you speak two languages, you can do this. Well, that's like assuming that because you have two hands, you can play the piano. We're looking for something that shows us that you're not just assuming you can do this. We're looking for something that shows the confidence that applicants have in themselves to actually be able to take the work and work with the highest level of clients on the highest level of material.
Now, your company deals mostly in business settings. I'm
right.
Wondering, Elizabeth, do you train people who might be doing things like, say, literary translation, or maybe if not, you know, deep Nobel Prize winning novelists or something, but maybe something like translating a comic book or something.
Absolutely. We offer three tracks in our master's program, and one of them is literary and applied literary translation. And the latter term means working in publishing. So, as you may know, we have the Dahlke Archive Press on our campus, an award-winning, internationally known literary publisher that specializes in fiction and translation. And so our students have the opportunity to intern with Dahlke and work on manuscripts for the press. So we do attempt to cultivate high-quality literary translators and set them on the path of a career in that field.
And for in every language, I don't know if you're doing, maybe you are. Do you handle that sort of translation?
I wish we did. One of my best friends from college is a novelist, and Lord of Mercy, I think her novel is like in 11 different countries. But literary translation tends to work a little different on the money flow. We don't get into that, but it's my understanding that in some of those cases, the translators actually pay the author for rights. And we work on the end where we get paid. We don't pay. We take the money.
Do you ever find yourself working, say, on marketing or advertising campaigns, moving that from one language to another?
Yes, very much so. And in a way, when you think about art, if a marketing campaign is done well, then you kind of go through some of the same things that you would go through with literary translation, where you're looking at play on words and you're looking at different meanings behind things other than face value. But marketing and advertising is a very quickly growing field, especially as everything starts to go global, because websites fall into that.
And that must be a place where localization is really key.
Yes, very much so. When you get into colors and the pictures like I was talking about before, but a lot of things that people don't think about are English, our language, reads from left to right, but there are a lot of languages out there that read from right to left, and there are even some languages that read from up to down. And so whenever you're doing a website for those, you pretty much have to recode, and this goes into what Elizabeth was talking about earlier in the program about software localization, but you pretty much have to redesign the website because whereas if you think about your typical website, whenever you go to it, odds are that your menu for other things that you can click on from the home page are either going to be across the top or they're going to be running down the side across the left. Well, if I speak a language that reads from right to left, it's going to seem kind of odd for my starting place where I choose what I want to look at to be where the end goes. And so you have to redesign a website from the inside out in order to reflect that these languages read in different directions.
And did you mention just a moment ago something about colors and that sort of thing when you're talking about different cultures?
Yes. I remember when I was a child asking my mom why Pizza Huts were all red. And she told me that it was because somebody had done a study somewhere and they decided that red makes you hungry. You know, so you think about what else red means in the U.S. Red is Valentine's Day. A red rose means love, as opposed to a pink or a yellow one. Red is a color of mourning in Asia. So that's something different. So you have to think about what does this color mean there.
So maybe the Pizza Hut signs are a different color out in Asia.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to ask Yum. But if they're not, that's probably why they're not selling as much pizza as they could.
We had a question coming in from Facebook, someone wondering about sign language interpreting. Is there a demand for that sort of thing? And I don't know, Elizabeth, is that something you deal with?
No, we don't. In fact, sign language interpreters are trained in a completely different way, and there's a very well-known program at Gallaudet University that does that. But we do not include that in our program.
Does your company, Tarina, do anything with American Sign Language, for instance?
You know, I very much so wish we did. When I was in college, I actually taught drama at the Kentucky School for the Deaf, and so I signed personally. But the spoken language world, like Spanish, French, we often joke that the sign language world is our great aunt. because that industry is so much more developed. Not translation, which is written, but interpreting, which is oral in the U.S., is still kind of a wild, wild west that is just beginning to form together. We have just now got national certification in place for oral interpreting within the last 2 or 3 years. But because of it being part of the Americans with Disabilities Act, sign language interpreting is a much more established and, I hate to say trusted, but I guess grounded industry in the U.S. They also get paid a lot more than spoken interpreters tend to do, except in the conference setting. The conference setting pays better than the community setting, but you never have a lot of the issues in the courts and in the hospitals with someone who signs that you have with someone who speaks Spanish. People just people that are deaf have been around in our society for as long as we've had a society. People that speak other languages without learning English is kind of a newer thing for America, even though immigration is very much at our heart. And so when you just walk into a hospital, a nurse in general is much more equipped and knows how to better handle someone who is deaf than she knows how to handle somebody who, I don't know, speaks Wolof, especially in the rural parts of the country.
Okay. I was wondering, you mentioned the Internet really opening things up and the need for different languages. Just in the years since you started your company, have you seen that change?
Yes. In all kinds of ways, in the same ways that I'm sure all of our listeners today have, to where we carry the Internet in our pocket now. You know, we didn't do that 8 years ago, or at least I didn't. And the fact of the matter is, with all of the content that is on the Internet, Translators Without Borders has a statistic that I really love to quote. They said that there's so much content right now not in English on the Internet that if every single American were to be a full-time interpreter for their job, we still would not be able to translate all of it into English. It's just amazing how much content is out there.
Elizabeth, are you finding that has this opened up the demand for translators?
Oh, absolutely, because most employers are heavily reliant on the Internet for their daily work, and they need people who can quickly provide interpretation or translation for that material.
Tarina, where are you finding your clients? Are there particular fields which have the greatest need for translation services?
Well, I guess it depends on how you define the greatest. We work with all kinds of sectors, all the way from manufacturing to domestic violence. But the more popular sectors in our industry and ones that we are finding a lot of growth in are the legal fields, healthcare to life sciences. There are a lot of medical device manufacturers out there. Exporting is one of the quickest ways to grow jobs in America. And a lot of American medical device manufacturers are now learning that in order to sell their goods in Europe, they must translate certain regulatory materials. So that's a high growth area for us right now as well.
This is a question I want to ask both of you, but I'll start with you, Tarina. Is most of your translation from between English and another language, or do you find yourself also doing translation between other languages, English not involved at all?
Most of ours, because we are based in the U.S., most of the work that our clients bring to us is either from or into English. However, we do offer, we have done Spanish into Portuguese before. We have done Dutch into Spanish. We do a lot in and out of Dutch because we have a U.S.-based client that also works in the Netherlands. So that's out there. Something that is growing right now, English is one of the more popular, we call it a source language in our profession, meaning the language that the document is already written in. But a concern right now is that our industry is starting to see a lot more into and out of Chinese. And the way that things are trending, one day our industry currently is trending, is predicting to where we're going to have more going in and out of Chinese than we do going in and out of English.
Interesting. And, oh, by the way, Ryan has texted back on the Pizza Hut question. Apparently, from what he understands, the Pizza Hut signs in Beijing look very similar to ours. So that's good to know. Elizabeth, what about the Center for Translation? Do you just work with English and other languages, or do you train people who are working without English at all?
No, we require that our students have a high level of proficiency in English. For practical reasons, we must work with students who work from their source language, meaning their second language, into English. And we do this because just of the pedagogical constraints that we're under in terms of working with individual students in their language pair. And we feel that our instruction is transferable, so what they learn in our program, they can transfer in other language directions.
Okay. Well, this is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and there's still time for your questions and comments about the field of translation. And your experiences as well. If you've worked as a translator or interpreter or worked with one and have questions about that or stories to tell, talk to us and Tarina Bell of In Every Language and Elizabeth Lowe, who directs the University of Illinois Center for Translation Studies. The phone number is 333-9455, our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Our email address is at will-talk@illinois.edu. I'm wondering what's the audition process or testing process for your employees, Tarina? How do you know if they're qualified?
We actually use a point system, and I haven't found any other translation companies that use a similar point system. But everybody starts at zero, and you get so many points for having a degree. You get so many points for having a degree in translation. For example, Elizabeth's program actually is pretty innovative for the U.S., but you can have a Ph.D. in translation in Europe. So we have different points for the different levels of education, and you get so many points, like if you majored in Spanish, or so many points if your degree actually was in translation, you get X amount of points per year of experience. We do not take anybody on who has less than 2 years' experience. Certification would give you X amount of points, so on and so forth, and then you have to have a total number of points in order to translate for us, period. And then depending on the degree of difficulty with different clients, there are certain clients that you must have scored higher in as well. And then we collect 3 references per every applicant, and you also get a certain amount of points for each positive reference that you bring in.
Elizabeth, is this pretty average? Is this what your graduates can expect as far as qualifications they'll have to meet when they're looking for employment?
Yes, absolutely. And that's one of the reasons we started our program, is that more and more employers are being very demanding about academic credentials to be hireable in the profession. And we screen all our students. Speaking of testing, they're required to take a translation proficiency test to receive admission to our program. And that test is based on national standards for translation proficiency. So each student who applies has to take a test from their source language into English, and we measure not language proficiency, but translation proficiency.
Okay. How many other schools in the U.S. are offering a master's degree in translation?
Well, right now, in terms of comprehensive master's degrees, there are 3 other schools. One is Monterey Institute in California, Kent State University in Ohio, and the University of Maryland just opened a program in Maryland. There's an online program at New York University. But in terms of campus-based comprehensive research universities, we are adding a lot of distinction to that field.
And I think you were telling me before we went on the air that Kent State offers the only doctorate in the country right now.
Yes, a doctorate in translation, and they're training their students to become researchers and university professors.
And this sounds like, from what Tarina said, compared to other parts of the world, this is really a developing field as far as expansion in the U.S.
That is absolutely correct. The field is actually exploding, and we have to really move quickly to even try to meet some of the demand.
And I think we were talking earlier, and it's certainly a common topic I've heard, is not as many people in the U.S. are proficient in 2 or 3 languages compared to other parts of the world. Is do you think that's holding us back in ways, or is it just making more work for those who have the proficiency to be a translator?
Well, it is common knowledge that our country does not place a lot of emphasis on language education. I wish, my personal wish would be that language education started in preschool in this country, as it does in many other countries. And for a variety of historical reasons, language has not been highly valued here. I think that picture is changing. The problem is how to get actual commitments, funding commitments into the schools to enrich language education at an early age.
Is a lack, Tarina, is a lack of language proficiency good for your business?
Yeah.
Or would there still be a need anyway, even if people were more proficient in other languages?
Emphatically, no, it is not good for my business. It actually makes it harder for us to hire key employees. While our project managers do not do the actual translation, they must oversee quality assurance. And we have had a very difficult time finding project managers for languages other than Spanish or French, because we are removing foreign language education from our schools. I don't know where it stands currently, but I do know a couple of months ago that it was actually before the Michigan legislature to no longer make foreign language a requirement for high school graduation. And so not only does it hurt us on our own job creation, if we cannot find the individual to hire, then we cannot create that job. We cannot contribute to the economy in that way. But it also hurts our clients, because as American businesses start to export more and more and to grow their businesses through bringing money into the U.S. economy, they will be unable to fill job positions because they're not the foreign language skills. Whenever you translate your website, people will start emailing you in other languages. And while you'll want a professional to do your website because you want to make sure that the marketing angle on it is done correctly, if they email and they say, hey, you know, your product's not working, can you help me? At a certain point in time, it's going to be a large financial drain on your company to have to translate that. If you could get an individual who speaks Spanish to work as a customer service rep, then you're going to be able to better serve that account. And so it actually holds back exporting when we have people that aren't educated. Not to mention, it just kind of makes us look like the great big idiots of the world. I don't mean that badly, but English as a second language is very much a misnomer. When I have friends coming over from Africa who English is their seventh language, you know, and we tend to think of Africa as not having the educational opportunities that we do, but this is their seventh language for this one family that I know. It just hurts us all around. It's like saying, what if we stop teaching math? We don't really need math. We have calculators. There's a calculator on my phone. There's a calculator on the computer. Let's just quit teaching math. No, it doesn't work that way.
I'm wondering what languages at this point are most in demand? What languages do you see the demand growing?
I see a lot of people posting for German language jobs. I see a lot of people posting for Japanese language jobs. I was talking earlier, there's a big shiny stylized focus on Chinese right now. But what I tell whenever I go to speak to high school students about why they should keep studying language and why to look at translation as a career, it depends on what you want to go into. Do you want to do this from a business angle, or do you want to do this from a community angle? If you want to do it from a community angle, look and see where is life the worst in the world, because those are the people that are going to be trying to come to our country in the next 3 to 10 years. You know, those are the people where their language is going to be needed in the hospital and the courtroom. If you're looking at it from a business angle, Asia and Africa right now are booming. We were talking earlier in the program about Apple. A year and a half ago, a translation buyer for Apple told me that Apple wants to be selling more in Africa, but that there aren't enough translators to support the high level of translation that Apple requires before they launch a product. And so right now, I mean, if a company like Apple is being held back because there aren't enough people. So looking at it from a business angle, right now, Asia and Africa are very much booming.
You know, you mentioned the different types of work that can be done in translation. Elizabeth, I'm wondering the sort of bottom line stuff that students may ask you. What sort of income levels can they expect in a career in translation, depending on what sort of work they seek out?
Well, it largely depends on how professional they become. You have to be really good at what you do. But if you are really good at what you do, we're seeing income figures for full-time translators going anywhere from $60,000 to over $100,000 a year. But you have to be excellent at what you do.
Okay. Entry-level jobs in translation might pay what?
Oh, my gosh. There's such a wide range because it depends on the contract that the translator receives. Sometimes translators are paid by the word. Other times they're paid in bulk contracts. So Tarina would probably know that better than I do. But it really varies widely with the employer.
And Tarina, that brings up the question, says, what do clients pay for these sort of services?
As Elizabeth is saying, it very much can vary. It is by the word, and a lot of it depends on what the client wants. You know, I mean, there's very much the expression, you get what you pay for. You can have people that are paying bargain basement type figures, but they're not getting the highest quality level of work. And then you've got other people that they can pay much, much higher amounts, and it's because what they're doing is so integral to their internal communications that it absolutely, completely, 100% must be right. So there's a whole gambit there. It's everything from Walmart to Tiffany's on price range.
Okay, well, we'll have to break it off there as we're out of time. Our guests today on Focus have been Professor Elizabeth Lowe of the Center for Translation Studies at the University of Illinois. They are just launching a master's degree program. And Tarina Bell, owner of the translation services firm In Every Language, available at ineverylanguage.com. Thank you both for coming on the show.
Thank you for having us.
And tomorrow on Focus, did your teacher ever catch you sneaking a comic book into class? Well, nowadays, it may be the teacher who brings the comics. Views have changed on their educational potential. We'll find out more from U of I Library of Science Professor Carol Tilley and cartoonist Josh Elder, who's editing graphic textbooks for classroom use at his company Reading with Pictures. That's on Wednesday's show. Focus is produced by Lindsay Moon, Jason Croft, our technical director. I'm Jim Meadows. This is Focus on WILL.